Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Barack Hussein Obama,
Barack Hussein Obama, do solemnly swear
that I screwed up.
To the Muslim world, we seek a new way forward.
America's commitment to seek a world without nuclear weapons.
And I screwed up.
The United States is not at war with Islam.
I'm proud that we passed a recovery plan free of earmarks.
And I screwed up.
These jobs not simply go to white male construction workers.
I have put an end to the interrogation techniques described in those OLC memos.
The only thing less popular,
and I screwed up,
than putting money into banks.
Punch star?
Putting money into the auto industry.
Punch star?
Gallows humor to get you through the day.
Punch star?
Each dollar we spend, only our most important national priorities.
I'm here saying I screwed up. Responsibility is not never making mistakes. It's owning up to them and trying to make sure you don't repeat them. And I screwed up.
Mama said there'll be days like this. There'll be days like this. Mama said.
Mama said. Mama said.
Mama said there'll be days like this. There'll be days like this. My mama said.
Mama said. Mama said.
I went walking the other day.
Thank God we're a nation of laws, because we have a government of outlaws. And the only thing that protects us from these outlaws are the laws themselves. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Here's a little headline that Janet Napolitano doesn't want you to hear. But the World Health Organization has raised the flu threat level, warning that a pandemic is imminent. Everybody knows this except the U.S. government. Every government on earth is doing what's necessary to protect the citizenry, with the exception of this government, which is doing everything it can to protect swine. On the right side of michaelsavage.com is an interesting article. It says, MSNBC can't make the rent. Did Keith Olbermann kill them? Now, it's well known that Keith Olbermann is almost single-handedly taking a wrecking ball to MSNBC and NBC. And it's reached the point where they're getting rid of their studios in Washington, D.C. and renting them to a university. I have heard rumors, and we cannot confirm or deny them, that Keith Olbermann has so contaminated the studios with the smell of urine when he is through with his show that others will not work in that studio, which is why they are thinking of getting rid of the studio in Washington. Apparently, Keith Olbermann cannot contain his bladder during the show, although he looks like a swarmy, smart guy. What goes on under the desk is not seen by the cameras. Mexican dies in U.S. hospital from flu, yet Obama refuses to close the border. I mean, this is amazing to me. The vermin in the media back up this, you know, immigrant uberalis. They're all good. They're all here to do great. We all love them. How is it that a country has so shifted hands that the entire government media complex has sympathy for non-citizens who are sick instead of citizens who deserve to be protected? It's called insanity. Have you changed your lifestyle because of the threat of the Napoleon flu? How are you protecting yourself from the Napolitano flu? Now, I realize they keep changing the name of it every day to protect pig farmers and to protect immigrants. It's really, the technical name is a technical name. The common name really is the Mexican flu. The original 1918, the big flu, was called the Spanish flu because it originated in Spain. There have been many incidences of Asian flu, correctly termed, because it originated in Asia. This originated in Mexico, so by logic it would be called the Mexican flu. But because we have twisted sisters running everything, it's now called A1, B1, C1, D1, CDC1, 9130, 409, 0210 flu. So I've affectionately named it the Napolitano flu in honor of our Department of Homeland Security. I think that the DHS should be renamed to the Department of Homeland Department of Disease Dissemination, DDD, Department of Disease Dissemination. Because if you hired somebody to make certain that a disease spread as rapidly as possible, you couldn't do better than Janet Napolitano and the CDC is doing. They're doing everything necessary to make certain that the flu virus is spread as rapidly as possible. If you care to comment, you can call me at 1-800-449-8255. I'm not personally going to listen to Obama's lies today. I could care less. He's a con man as far as I'm concerned. Now, I'm sensitive to the issue of folks who are African-American who think that every attack upon Obama is a racial statement. I'm sensitive to it, but I'm not going to cater to it because my position is based upon his policies, not his race. And thus far, he has been a miserable failure. And the polls show it, other than the fake polls. Liberal poll, Gallup. Gallup is a liberal poll, been around forever. So if you want to compare poll to poll, you've got to go poll to poll going back president to president to president. The Gallup organization has been around a long time. They're a left-of-center polling organization, as they all are. And they claim that Obama is as unpopular or within a hair's breadth of Bill Clinton, the second most unpopular president in modern history, at this time in his administration. But you wouldn't know that by watching the Twisted Sisters in the media. And that's why they're going out of business. That's why CNN and MSLGBT is dying. That's why I'm thriving. And frankly, look, I'm not a big fan of Fox News, but they do a very good job by and large, except for Schlepp Smith, who belongs in Al Jazeera as far as I'm concerned. I mean, Schlepp Smith belongs in Al Jazeera, but he's a pretty boy with blue eyes, and apparently there's a big audience for pretty boy with blue eyes. But Fox News is thriving. They're doing a good job because they're in touch with the mainstream of America. The Fox News channel is actually reflective of the majority of the American people. It's the other organizations that are out of touch with the American people, such as CNN and such as MSLGBT. I mean, MSLGBT has catered so far to the left, it's going out of business. And Keith Olbermann is probably single-handedly responsible for the wreckage of the Peacock. And if GE doesn't see this, I believe there's going to be a worldwide backlash against General Electric's products, by the way. Charlotte, North Carolina. Jonathan, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Dr. Savage. Hey, I'd like for you to lighten up on the president a bit. You know, it seems
I don't care what you'd like. You have your own radio show. You can lighten up on the communist if you like.
Well, you know, it's not even your show anymore. It's the president's show. The forum for your show, since Barack Obama won the presidency, is based on him. I mean, if we didn't have a president,
so in other words, we in the media are supposed to worship him because you like him.
You're supposed to like
him. No, excuse me, dummy, listen to me, dummy. What's the purpose of a press? It's to stand between you and a dictatorship, schmuck. The day the media salutes everything an administration does is the day you're living in a dictatorship. You don't understand that?
It's the Barack Obama show. That's your show. It's no longer the Michael Savage show.
Well, wait. You mean you're an expert on my show? How long have you been listening to this show, Jonathan?
An idiot could figure out your show. You're four.
Jonathan, how long have you been listening to my show? Apparently, you're an expert on my program.
Now I'm going to hang up on you.
No, you're not going to hang up on me because you were. John, New York, WOR, go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, you are the great teacher of this day and age, and when I read scripture and look back on times, I'm trying to figure out which prophet you were back in the day. Maybe it was Job. What do you think, Doctor? You're awesome.
I don't compare myself to a biblical character. You know, if you push me to the limits on that one, I can get into a megalomaniacal mood and start to say Moses, but I'm not going to go there. In fact, the other night I had a fantasy that I was going to lead the people through the Red Sea. I was going to make the Red Sea part. But since it was only a fantasy, I didn't think I should share it with my audience.
Well, I have an idea, Doc. I spend a lot of time in my garden, sunflowers. I grow down here in South Carolina. I live in New York, too. And I got to tell you, you and a lot of the other talk shows, people, you should all form your own government, and you'd be the great president.
Let me explain something. We are not a government. We are commentators. Our job is to comment. Our job is to stand between a growing dictatorship and the people. We are supposed to be the barrier. We're supposed to keep them in line. We're not supposed to worship government officials. Our job is to be the outsider saying, hold on, you've crossed the line there. Hold on, you're taking too much power away from the people. Hold on, you're taking too much of their money. That's our job, John.
Well, I want to say this to you, Doctor. You really touched my life. I love reading scripture. I love hearing your stories in New York, the Catskills. I'm originally from Rockland County, New York, and I'll tell you what.
Well, maybe I should just tell stories today instead of doing politics, because I don't really want to offend the Obama worshipers. They believe my job is to worship Obama.
Well, I love you.
All right, thanks for the. I never worship another man. I never have. It's against my religion. So if it's your religion to worship a politician, I pity you. That's all I can say. I didn't worship George Bush. I criticized him for 8 straight years. Now, this dictator has arisen out of nowhere. He's come out of nowhere. It's almost the biblical plague, what he has done to this country. He has almost induced a plague in this nation. Now, you say that those are harsh words. Well, we live in very harsh times with an extremist president who is one of the greatest opportunists I've ever seen in my life. Getting away with it because of guys like David Gregory, guys like Keith Olbermann. I mean, it's because of people like that who basically worship the man and will never say he's done anything wrong. Look, even a fellow traveler, Russ Feingold, as liberal a Democrat as you're going to find, Russ Feingold, who has tried to grant amnesty to illegal aliens, who's done everything against everything I believe in, even Russ Feingold, liberal, has said the following. The article is here on michaelsavage.com. I forget where we linked it up from. Hold on 1 minute. I want to give you the exact quote. It was dropped already. Perfect. Gone just when I needed it. It'll be back up. But he gave F to Obama. He gave Obama an F in terms of national security. A fellow traveler. Can you believe this? 1-800-449-8255. Obama says we've begun remaking America. Now the man wants to turn us into a totally socialist nation. This one imposter, this one dictator has taken over the banks, has taken over the auto industry. He is now trying to take over the healthcare industry, the energy industry, and national security. He has put people who worked for George Soros into the Pentagon. You are much more at risk today than you were 100 days ago. Your life hangs like a loose tooth because of this imposter. I'll be right back. Savage. The CDD, the Centers for Disease Dissemination, run by some jerk in Washington who answers to Napoleon Tano, says that it's too late to close the border. It would do nothing. That's the exact opposite of reality in epidemiology. You know, you study epidemiology as I did professionally, and you can't take away from me the reality of my degree. I mean, I have a real PhD in epidemiology and human nutrition, so I know what I'm talking about. No epidemic has been treated like this, except those that have been politicized, and there have been many examples of that in this country. But let's look at Europe. France has asked the European Union to suspend flights to Mexico. Air France crew refuses to board a flight to Mexico. Germany, Austria confirm cases. United Kingdom, they're going to leaflet every house. Phoenix police are wearing protective gear to protect against the flu. 30 Marines have been quarantined. But the dummies who run the government say, wash your hands. Don't close the border, wash your hands. You're not being protected by your government. Your government is protecting the virus. Now, are they knowingly protecting the virus to hurt you? No. They're knowingly protecting pig farmers and commerce that flows from Mexico and from the U.S. And I understand that, but they have their priorities upside down. They're thinking as they normally do in the short term. And you can do short-term thinking and have short-term gains. But in the long term, this will cost the economy much more if the disease spreads at a rapid rate, at a more rapid rate. So what you have to do is eat it and take a short-term loss for a long-term gain. And that means slam the border shut, use National Guard troops, put them on the border, nothing in, nothing out, and just accept the essentials. That's all. End of story. Now, will it stop the flu? No. But it will slow the flu. You're certainly not going to bring more sick people into America to get sick and make the doctor sick. I heard from a doctor who I'm not going to mention right now, just as Michael Savage told you. The sick Mexicans are coming into hospitals in California. Doctors have been told not to come into some community hospitals unless it's an emergency for their patients. They know what's going on. Mexicans are swarming across the border. They could care less about you. They could care less about the patients in the hospital. They care only about themselves, as most people do. They want gold-plated free medical care. And they know that the gringo system is so upside down that they're going to get gold-plated medical treatment, or they can sue with the help of Marvin from the ACLU. And that's how a nation dies. I came into radio 15 years ago with a program that was entitled Immigrants and Epidemics. Believe me, I know what I'm talking about, and I know that there are certain principles of epidemiological containment, and one of them is to isolate the original locus of infection. The original locus of infection is established to be somewhere in Mexico. Now they're saying it's in this region, that region. What you do in the interim is you stop the flow of individuals from Mexico. You stop tourists going into Mexico until this disease is contained. You don't let thousands of people cross the border and flow into your hospitals and schools unless you're insane. You get it? But that doesn't stop the lunatics in the media from trying to cut anyone off who knows reality. This has happened on Schlepp Smith's show on Fox. It's happened from a schmuck on CNN. It's happened on MSLGBT. They cut anybody off who says that illegal immigration is directly tied to the dissemination of the flu. And that's, they're showing their ignorance. They're showing their stupidity. You get it? Kathleen in New York? WOR, go ahead, please.
Yes, I wanted to comment on the Obama show. It's because everything that this man has been doing is an assault on our daily life. And I like the idea of, like, interspersing stories with your commentary and the things that you have that you are an expert on.
How are you protected? Are you doing anything differently because of the flu? Have you altered your lifestyle in any way?
Honestly, no. I work in food service, so I'm pretty, you know, I'm pretty much washing my hands all the time anyway, and I, you know, I'm very aware.
Would you buy a taco from a street stand on 42nd Street?
Savage.
So I'm asking you, how has the flu altered your lifestyle? Has it, or are you foolish enough to believe it's not going to affect you because you're a good person, or what? As I defined 30 years ago in one of my previous books, microbes do not discriminate. They don't know if you're a good liberal and that you love immigrants. They really don't know what your politics are. They could care less. Microbes do not discriminate. I mean, I'm altering my lifestyle. Truthfully, I've withdrawn a little bit from my normal, machinations. For example, I have ringside tickets for this fight coming up in Vegas this Saturday night between Hatton and Pacquiao. And it's going to be an amazing fight. Those of you who are boxing fans, most of you aren't. It's a very small audience for this, but it's a fanatically large audience in the world. You got Britain's Ricky Hatton in his IBO light welterweight title defense against the Filipino Manny Pacquiao. And Pacquiao's amazingly fast. I've watched both of them fight. It's going to be an astounding, fight. I'm in the, fourth, fifth row. I'm not going. I'm not going because I don't want to be in a crowded auditorium with people who've flown in from England who are drunk, who've been up for 3 days, or have flown in from Manila for the fight, and God knows where they've been or what. And then the normal, a crowded, packed arena right now? I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I just don't want to go. So you say, well, the tickets are worth a lot of money. Yeah, well, my health is worth a lot more. Former Bonnie Frank staffer, now top Goldman Sachs lobbyist.
I'm Bonnie Frank, and I run the financial service committee. And although I know nothing about business except how to run a boy cat house in your friend's apartment 20 years ago, I know how to run the banks, and I know how to run the General Motors. So what I've done here is I've taken my top lobbyist, And my recent top staff has just become a top lobbyist for Goldman Sachs, because I'm an honest guy. Just ask me. Because it's the days of war. It's the days of war for me and Rahm. It's the days of war that a man of my low caliber can rise to such a high power. It really is a day's voice. It's almost biblical. The man of my low caliber can have so much power over the bank. It's really astounding.
Houston, Texas, Clay, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I just have a question for you. I've gone online and reading the reports about how bad the flu virus is and how many people are getting ill from it and everything. And then on whose website you read seven cases are confirmed?
No. It's much higher. It's much higher. The website's a little out of date. It's much higher than seven cases. You're listening to Rush Limbaugh too much, who's fobbing this off because he doesn't understand the magnitude of this illness in that he doesn't have an education in epidemiology. So he's taking the standard Arbuckle, don't worry attitude. He's completely wrong. I mean, you want to put your head in the sand and say, don't worry, go ahead, don't worry, if you think it's all a conspiracy.
I just see that it was on the Drudge Report. It was still on there.
There's 91 confirmed cases in the U.S. of A. 91, not 8.
Okay.
So you could say that's nothing, but if you consider the mutations and combinations of illnesses and the way illnesses spread, I would be concerned. Why would the Phoenix police be wearing gear to protect against the flu? Do you think that they're foolish?
No.
Have you heard about 30 U.S. Marines at Camp Pendleton have been quarantined? Has that made it to Rush Limbaugh's show? See, this is the problem. Let me explain something. Rush is a decent guy, but Rush has his limitations, as we all do. He knows nothing about epidemiology. And so he's taking the standard, it's the government lying to you approach. Well, yeah, the government's lying to you. They're lying to you that it's not a threat. How in the world so-called conservatives can say it's not a threat is just an example of their ignorance, not their knowledge. It is a threat. Doctors are being warned in community hospitals not to come into the hospital unless it's an emergency because they understand that infected people are swarming in from Mexico to get free treatment. So if you fly around in a Gulfstream and you think that you're God, you start to think like you're God. And then you wind up thinking falsely. You wind up thinking in a distorted manner. Don't you get it? If you can walk with kings and never lose your common touch, then you will be a man, my son. Rudyard Kipling's great poem. It's very difficult for people to fly around on their own magic carpets and come down to earth and still think clearly. And although they may say that they're not liberals, they're conservative, doesn't matter. Once you start to think you're different and better, you're finished. Then you lose touch with reality. I, fortunately for me, have never lost touch with reality. I know what reality is, which is what makes me a functional talk show host. Oh, I get a swelled head every once in a while, but God brings me back down to earth, whether it be a toothache, a lungache, a backache, a footache. Or, I mean, I know my mortality is ever present. I understand the teachings of Don Juan. I know death is ever present. I've never forgotten that. I know that the angel of death trails us wherever we go. And I recognize that it's every breath I take is a gift from God. So, you know, you want to get away from that and start thinking that you're a demigod, go ahead. But if it starts to distort your thinking, then you're losing your value to the people who rely upon you. You must retain your humility. Now, the word humility comes from the word humus, the same root as the word humus, rather. The same word humble, humus, humility. Hum, humus. It means we come from nothing and we return to nothing. You want me to get very dark on you right now? You want me to bring you back down to what you really are? That's what you really are. You're a human being. You're not a god. You're not a demigod. No one is. You are subject to all of the laws of nature. You have not transcended the zoological order. You are not an angel. You are a human being. As my mother used to say, I can't repeat it on the air. She was pretty down to earth. When I would see people cavorting like fools, movie stars of their time, she would say something in reference to their bath habits. Let's put it to you that way. Something to the effect of, do you think that their bath doesn't stink, in other words? I'm sure you've heard the same thing. You know, there's a lot to be said for peasant wisdom. Peasant wisdom has a way of transcending all the BS in the world. And peasant intuition is often much smarter than elite wisdom. So don't underestimate the peasant. That's all I can say to you. Now, what you'd like to talk about is your business. 1-800-449-8255. So the CDC has 91 confirmed cases in the USA. That doesn't mean there aren't more. That means there are many, many more. It's just that they haven't been confirmed yet. How many hundreds of others are sick who haven't even gone to the doctor? Why have 30 U.S. Marines been quarantined at Camp Pendleton? Well, because one Marine has the swine flu in the dorm or whatever. And for the CDC to raise the alert level to 5 out of 6, I think it's very, very prudent of them, number one. WHO warns flu pandemic imminent. And for idiots in the media to say pay no attention to it is foolish. They're no different than the liberals who say don't close the borders. Same stupidity, same arrogance. And so since the government is not going to protect you, you have to do what you can to protect yourself. And it certainly goes beyond washing your hands, schmuck. It goes beyond washing your hands, comma, schmuck, period. Okay? Avoid crowds, number one. Watch out who's handling your food. If you're going to be in a big city, my friends, you got problems on your hands. That's a literal statement. You have problems on your hands. You go to a supermarket? Go ahead. Go to a supermarket. Go push a cart now in a supermarket and then rub your eye and nose. You can say with definitive certainty that you know who pushed the cart before you. They didn't have a little snot in their hand. You want me to get really graphic with you? You know what your hand just touched? How do you know? Oh, you know. I suggest you wear throwaway gloves when you go in public places. You know, it's very intriguing that this is coming up now. I got to go back to a story from yesteryear. And I don't remember the year, 67, 68, I don't remember when. I was in the Grand Bahama Island with a friend when it was just being developed. And he offered me a job. I was a young kid. I think I was a teacher. I don't even remember. He said, well, why don't you come to the Bahamas and sell real estate with me? I'm not a good salesman, by the way. My heart wasn't in it. But he made a fortune. He wanted to make a big fortune. He was in with the early developers of that lovely island. I met, I believe the man's name was Remington, one of the last survivors of the Remington fortune who created the Remington Rand Corporation. And to me, when I was a poor kid, if I met a man who was that wealthy, I was like looking up to a god, you know what I'm saying? Poor kids look up to the rich, no matter what they say to you. So when I got around this guy, I try to speak with him quietly, and I try to learn something. And I said to him, isn't it true, because I read somewhere, that he added to the family fortune in the 1918 era, in the flu era, could have been his father, listen to this, by putting out paper wallets for money that people could throw away after getting cash from a bank because people were so afraid of spreading, of the flu spreading. I mean, someone will rip the idea off. It won't go around today. But you go to a cash machine. You trade cash. Paper is a very good way to transmit viruses. It's extremely, extremely good because it's somewhat porous. It's got a lot of ridges in it. Viruses can be carried in a paper bill. Very, very good way to spread the flu is to give dollars, take dollars in supermarkets, give coinage, take coinage in various places. So you have a lot to think about. You have an awful lot to think about. Is this panic? I hope not. I'm not trying to panic you. I'm trying to give you reasonable advice beyond what the liars in the government are saying. If I was in charge, the borders would have been closed Saturday. I would have the National Guard on the border. Nobody who was sick would come across this border. Nobody who was sick would go into a U.S. hospital. I would have put state troopers in every hospital in America. No non-citizen gets into the hospital. They would be turned away at the hospital door. Not because I'm a mean guy. Not because I want to hurt sick people. But because my obligation as a public health official is to protect the healthy more than it is to treat the sick. Don't you understand everything is upside down? Of course you want to treat the sick if you can. But your first job as a public health official is to protect the general population from the disease, not to protect the sick people from the general population. But this is an example of a topsy-turvy world that we live in, where virtually every policy is upside down and backwards. That's how you have a pervert like Bonnie Frank in charge of banks who takes his top staffer who goes to Goldman Sachs and the man doesn't go to jail. Everywhere you turn, you have crooks and perverts running everything. You wake up today and you find out that a woman who worked for George Soros is now number two in the Defense Department or number three. And you say this can't be happening. It can't be. It is happening. Las Vegas, Barry, welcome to the program.
Yeah, Dr. Savage, a quick statement. I'm a young black male, and I'm not a Barack Obama fan. I catch a lot of heat because of it. people expect me to follow him just because, you know, we have one thing in common, and that's our race.
That would be like saying I should follow George Bush because he's white.
Exactly, you know, and
right? I mean, what, because he's white, I like him? I mean, what sense does that make?
Right,
there are
right.
competent black people, incompetent black people, and ordinary black people. Doesn't mean that just because he's president and he's of a similar race, that he's going to be a great guy and knows what he's doing.
Exactly. And quick question before I go. Do you think this is our generation of eugenics, this this flu that's going on?
Well, what do you mean eugenics? You mean it's going to wipe out a large segment of the population?
Absolutely.
No, no, no. It seems to be a rather not lethal, not very lethal flu at this time in this country. At this time in this country, it does not seem to be too lethal. However, the caveat is now coming. These viruses are mutating rapidly, and we don't know what they could be tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. You've got to be prudent, Dara. You've got to watch the public sphere and watch where your hands go. And people don't realize how many times a day they touch things, then touch their nose, wipe their eyes. They don't realize what they're doing. You know, most of us do it all day long. We're not realizing that we're rubbing our nose, particularly in allergy season right now in the springtime, right? People usually have a cough or a runny nose, and they're reaching for it. You know, they're just wiping their nose quickly with their hand. It happens without them even thinking about it. It's almost instinctual. You get it?
Right.
So, Barry, are you looking forward to the fight this weekend?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's going to be a good fight.
Are you going to the arena?
No, I'm staying out of there. But if you come out here, I would love to meet you, though.
That's very sweet of you. Thank you very much. I'm very popular in Las Vegas amongst cab drivers for some reason. I am not popular in other quarters of the city, but amongst taxi drivers, I am. It's very interesting. All right. You want to talk about the flu. You want to talk about the overflight in New York and the incompetence of the administration. Again, I have to spend a minute on this. Let's put aside the conspiracy theories about Air Force One being used in a publicity stunt, just for a minute. So it wasn't a hijacked jet. Okay, it was Obama's minions took the plane for a joyride. Now, I'd like to know, does that engender confidence in you that this college professor did not know that his airplane was missing? He learned about it when you learned about it? How is that possible? Don't you realize that Air Force One is a flying office in the event of a national emergency? So that means for the period of time that somebody was joyriding his jet, and we don't know who it is. It could have been one of the girls from the open from the Soros Institute who said, wow, hey, I'm in the Defense Department now. Let's take a flight with the Klavan. Let's all go up. Let's take a ride, man. It's our jet. It's our Air Force now. We don't know jack about the military, but we're running it. So let's take a joyride, girls. Yeah. So in other words, during that time period that somebody was joyriding the president's jet, he didn't know about it. So he was, in other words, he had no way to get out of Washington on an Air Force One jet. It was gone. That gives you a feeling of confidence in a commander-in-chief, that he doesn't have control over his own jet? That's like a father not knowing his kid took his car for a joyride. But a little worse, wouldn't you say? I'll be right back. Savage. Obama is one of the most stunning con men who has ever hit the White House. This man today gave a speech that was all lies. He disowned the deficit today that he helped shape. He said that wasn't me today during his 100th day in office. He said he had no responsibility for the huge budget deficit waiting for him on day one. But actually it was Obama and the other Democrats who controlled Congress for the previous 2 years who created this budget that was so out of balance. So he lied about that. As a president, a candidate, as a president-elect, he backed the Bush-era stimulus plan that made the deficit deeper. He then promoted spending plans that have made it much deeper still. So he meets stooges at an Arnold, Missouri high school Wednesday, a fake Stalinist conference, a fake forum, and he tells what progress he has made, and he comes up like he knows what he's talking about, and he makes assertions that are completely false. He says that his proposed budget will cut the deficit in half by the end of my first term. It's a liar. How do we know where trillion-dollar deficits and what economic calamities might be negotiated as a result of these phenomenal spending investments. And look at his other claims and his lies. Let's look at the rest of his lies. Congress controls the budget, not the president. And Congress was under the Democratic control for Obama's last 2 years as Illinois senator. It was not George W. Bush. They are the ones who distorted the budget in the last 2 years. To be sure, they wanted to make it bigger than it was. Well, now they're making it bigger than it was. And the economy, by the way, has worsened under Obama, not gotten better. The media keeps telling you things are getting better, but they're not. They're getting worse. Unemployment is worse. The deficit is worse. But the vermin in the media keep lying to you. By and large, it's a giant propaganda spree promoting the biggest fraudster in the history of the presidency. And what has he done? Obama the liar has persuaded Congress to expand children's health insurance, education spending, health information technology. He wants to improve health care. How is he going to afford that? How is that going to help us? And he keeps making up lies. He says that if we expand health care, we're going to save money in the long run. That's never been proven. That's a liberal platitude. That's just platitudinous, ridiculous stupidity. There's no proof of that. That's liberal thinking and a liberal platitude. There's one thing is for sure, that you're going to bankrupt the country even further. And so when he says, number one, we inherited a $1.3 trillion deficit, that wasn't me, that's a lie. That's a total lie. It was him and it was the Democrats. They ran Congress. They're in control of the budget, not the president. So it's Congress who controls the purse strings. He did it. His Democrat cohorts did it, not Bush. He did it. He's the one who broke the budget. So he's been lying all day long. The deficit is now nearly quadrupling to $1.75 trillion under him. He did it, not George Bush. He did it, not George Bush. Watch out what's coming next. He's going to try to expand health care to every human being in America, which means illegal aliens as well. That will be the end of the budget completely. It'll end it completely. And then granting amnesty to illegal aliens, goodbye, America.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Everybody's emailing going, the illegals are bringing it across the border. Relax.
Whenever anything bad happens, the U.S. always blames it on Mexico.
Let me get it. So you're using the swine flu as an example to just shut the border down altogether, that so no commerce or no immigration
well,
at
no.
all?
Well, no, there's a flu outbreak happening. You're worried about illegal immigrants. They haven't closed the border. They're not going to close the border because we're worried about commerce. This flu is already here.
I'm People talking about swine flu. This is not about immigration. I'm talking about swine flu.
We're talking about flu here. And are you using this health crisis to make your own point about national security?
So there it is. Schlepp Smith is no different than the girls at MSLGBT when it comes right down to it. They're all part and parcel of the same team, which is virtually working against the American people, in my opinion. We have an epidemic where politics should have no part whatsoever in containing the epidemic. Unfortunately, we have nothing but politicians and politics at play. There's no public health at play. Public health would say contain the epidemic, close the border, don't let people into your hospitals from a foreign country. But okay, you don't want to listen to me? Go listen to schmucks. Go ahead. What do you want me to do? you want me to go along with the program. And then on the other side, you have ignoramuses. You have ignoramuses saying, oh, it's all being blown out of proportion by WHO. Schma, I mean, you know, you got schmucks, uneducated people out there in the media. What do you want from me? I'm giving you an educated opinion. It's worth listening to. That's why you listen. So you want to talk about the flu? You want to talk about Obama losing control of Air Force One? You want to talk about all the topics of the day? There's a lot of news out there. Oh, yeah. Goldman Sachs hires Bonnie Frank Stafford to be its lobbyist. That's a big story. Obama lied about that, too. There would be no lobbyists in government when I'm president. Now, he has 17 of them, including tax dodgers. Now, Goldman Sachs' new lobbyist was recently top staffer to represent Bonnie Frank, the House Financial Services Committee. Got chaired by Bonnie Frank. How is this possible? How is he not in prison? How is this possible that you don't see what's going on here? How do you not see this? Obama is the greatest fraudster in the history of the presidency. Look, they're all no good. They're all... Politicians are all deceitful. That's how they get where they are. Let's be clear. They're not like you and I. Politicians are not like you and I. They're better at lying than anybody. That we know. But when you have a fraudster like this running the country and you don't see it, I can't help you. Fed's new New York City flyover would cause panic. George Soros says Cheney's role in approving CIA interrogation techniques should be examined. I think Soros should be examined as a seditious element in the U.S. government. I think George Soros should be investigated. I believe he's trying to destroy America. I always have felt this about this man. He is now running the government. George Soros is the puppeteer who put Obama in office. George Soros had a former employee who is now number three in the Defense Department. George Soros is pulling the strings on everything that's going on in this country. If you don't know who George Soros is, then you shouldn't be listening to this show. You should be listening to somebody else. Listen to NPR. Very reliable individuals at NPR. Or if you want, go to MSLGBT. Listen to Keith Oderman. I mean, there are rumors. I mean, it came out today that NBC is trying to rent out their studios and headquarters in Washington, D.C. I don't know if the rumor is true or not. That part of it is because Keith Oderman has so saturated the floors with bodily fluids as a result of his inability to control himself during his shows that they can no longer have individuals work there. I don't know if there's any truth to that. It's a rumor, as I say. It cannot be confirmed or denied. And it's possible that there's no truth to the fact that individuals in biohazard suits need to clean up after Keith Oderman gets through on his stall. But there's no question that the radical leftist agenda of NBC and MSNBC and CNN is killing those networks. There is no question that the reason Fox is doing well, even though I have problems with guys like Schlepp Smith and Neil Cavuto because they're far too liberal for me, they still do a very good job because they're in touch with most of mainstream America. That's why they're thriving. And it's true about me as well. Gloria in San Diego agrees. That's why she's on the show.
A pleasure. How are you?
Go ahead, make your point, please. Yes.
Yes, the point is, without you, talk radio wouldn't be worth listening to.
That's always very nice to lump me in with people who are fill-ins. I love that. It's not, like saying to Mickey Mantle, you're a great ball player, and the guy who filled in for you when you had the flu was just as good as you. I love that. Or that's like saying to Muhammad Ali, your sparring partner, and you really make boxing a wonderful I saw a great movie last night. It was about the showdown between Joe Frazier and Muhammad Ali in 1970-something. Wow! In Manila. I really never paid that much attention to it, but it was apparently Joe Frazier who crippled Ali. Ali was never able to fight again after that. In fact, in the 14th round of that fight, Ali said, cut my gloves off to his trainer. He wanted to quit. He couldn't get up. But they stopped the fight because Frazier was blind. We didn't know that Frazier was blind in one eye going into the fight from a previous injury, and he had been fighting Ali with one good eye, and then when that eye got closed from the punishment he took, he was fighting blind, and he was still standing after the fight was over. You talk about warriors. You talk about... Now, I'll tell you why I'm relating to it, even though you're not a fight fan. I'll bring it back to politics. I looked at the documentary, and I looked at the Joe Frazier's face while he's being interviewed. He was 62 years old at the time during this interview, and he said, He always took pleasure in the fact that he practically crippled Muhammad Ali. I mean, these guys wanted to kill each other. There was a grudge going back a long time. And he took pleasure. He said, look at me. He says, I'm 62. He said, I'm still enjoying myself. And he said, look at him, meaning look what he did to Ali. So it's a brutal sport. That is true. There's no question about it. But you're talking about gladiators. You're not talking about normal men. You're talking about men who have the power in their fist to kill you with one blow. One jab from a professional boxer would kill the ordinary man. So you have to understand what you're dealing with here. So here you have Joe Frazier said, other men can walk in my shoes, but they won't be me. Other men can wear my hat, but they won't be me. So as I'm watching Joe Frazier speak in this documentary, which was done a few years ago, I say to myself, if I met Joe Frazier, many of you don't know who I'm talking about, just imagine an ex-heavyweight champion, a phenomenal fighter who's an African-American. I said, if I was in an apartment talking to Joe about politics, I said to myself, does this man, I wonder, does a guy like that listen to my show? Are there any black guys out there who are realists, who listen to me and understand the battle I'm in every day? Do they understand that talk radio is very much like a boxing match? That although it's not physical, the wear and tear on you is very similar? Do they comprehend that when you are battling a lying government, whether it be the Bush administration for 8 years or now the Democrat socialists, that you are in a battle, in essence, for your survival? Do they comprehend this? And I said to myself, would Frazier, look how I think as I'm watching TV, would Joe Frazier, if I'm sitting with him in a room, would he respect me or would he hate me because I don't trust Obama and I think Obama's a liar who's leading us down a socialist path? I said, well, I'll never get to know the answer to that because the chances of me sitting in a room with Joe Frazier are nil. And I don't think I would know that. But then I said, I wonder if there are any black guys out there like Joe Frazier, even ex-fighters, who listen to my show and understand what I'm going through. Do they understand what it is to do a 15-round fight every day? Do they understand that this is the same kind of damage upon your psyche and that you have to really float like a butterfly and sting like a bee or you're not going to last in this business? That no matter what people say about you, you got to ignore them and you got to keep on punching and you got to get up and come out after every break. You got to get up and you got to come out and fight. You got to get up every morning and say, I got to get in that ring. Do you have any idea what wear and tear that is upon a man? And would a professional fighter comprehend that, even though it's all words? Remember, words are as powerful as deeds. I'll be right back. I just received an email from a doctor friend of mine on Obama's narcissism, written by an Israeli psychiatrist who's an expert about narcissism, and I want to read it to you. His name is Dr. Vakanin, Sam Vakanin, V-A-K-N-I-N, Israeli psychologist. And he said when he talks about narcissism, the world listens. And he says, here's what Dr. Vakanin says. I must confess I was impressed by Senator Barack Obama from the first time I saw him. At first I was excited to see a black candidate. He looked youthful, spoke well, appeared to be confident. A wholesome presidential package. I was put off soon, not just because of his shallowness, but also because there was an air of haughtiness in his demeanor that was unsettling. His posture and his body language were louder than his empty words. Obama's speeches are unlike any political speech we have heard in American history. The fact that Obama is a total incognito with zero accomplishment makes this inexplicable infatuation alarming. Obama is not an ordinary man. He is not a genius. In fact, he is quite ignorant on most important subjects. Obama is a narcissist. Dr. Sam Vakanin is the author of The Malignant Self-Love, believes Barack Obama appears to be a narcissist. Now, he then goes on and gets into an area that I touched on, and that is the trauma of his early life. Remember I put Obama on the couch about a month ago, why he's like this? Listen to what the doctor says. Quote, Obama's early life was decidedly chaotic and replete with traumatic and mentally bruising dislocations, says Vakanin. Mixed-race marriages were even less common then. His parents went through a divorce when he was an infant. Obama saw his father only once again before he died in a car accident. And then his mother remarried, and Obama had to relocate to Indonesia, a foreign land with a radically foreign culture, to be raised by his stepfather. At the age of 10, he was whisked off to live with his maternal white grandparents. He saw his mother only intermittently in the following few years, and then she vanished from his life in 1979. She died of cancer in 1995. He says, one must never underestimate the manipulative genius of pathological narcissists. They project such an imposing personality that it overwhelms those around them. Charmed by the charisma of the narcissist, people become like clay in his hands. They cheerfully do his bidding and delight to be at his service. The narcissist shapes the world around himself and reduces others in his own invented image. He creates a cult of personality. His admirers become his codependents. Narcissists have no interest in things that do not help them to reach their personal objective, and on and on. And so if you look at the article, which we're putting up on michaelsavage.com, you will see that narcissists have appeared through history many times before. And he suggests that the senator is either a narcissist or he may have narcissistic personality disorder, NPD. They project a grandiose but false image of themselves. Jim Jones, the charismatic leader of People's Temple, he writes, the man who led over 900 of his followers to cheerfully commit mass suicide was a narcissist. David Koresh, Charles Manson, Joseph Kony, Shoko Asahara, Stalin, Saddam, Mao, Kim Jong-il, and Adolf Hitler are a few examples of narcissists of our time. All these men had tremendous influence over their fanciers. They promised them the moon, but alas, invariably, they brought them to their doom. When you are a victim of a cult of personality, you don't know until it is too late. One determining factor in the development of NPD is childhood abuse. And then he went on to the childhood. I was on to that earlier. They are focused on one thing alone, and that is power. All other issues are meaningless to them, and they do not want to waste their precious time on trivialities. Anything that does not help them is beneath them and do not deserve their attention. So there it is. There it is. A man who lives in luxury, who takes a private jet to vacation in Hawaii, and who has raised nearly $500 million for his campaign, has no interest in the plight of his own brother. Why? Because his brother cannot be used for his ascent to power. A narcissist cares for no one but himself. The election was like no other in the history of America. What can be more dangerous than having a man bereft of conscience, a serial liar, and one who cannot distinguish his fantasies from reality as the leader of the free world? I hate to sound alarmist, he writes, but one is a fool if one is not alarmed. Many politicians are narcissists. They pose no threat to others. They are simply self-serving and selfish. He goes on. Obama evidences symptoms of pathological narcissism, which is different from the run-of-the-mill narcissism of a Richard Nixon or a Bill Clinton, for example. To him, reality and fantasy are intertwined. This is a mental health issue, not just a character flaw. Pathological narcissists are dangerous because they look normal and even intelligent. It is this disguise that makes them treacherous. Well, read it yourself. Go ahead, look at it yourself. Look at it yourself. He makes some predictions. I don't think I'm going to read it to you. He says, it's no wonder that Ahmadinejad, Hugo Chavez, the Castroites, the Hezbollah, the Hamas, the lawyers of the Guantanamo terrorists, and virtually all sworn enemies of America are so thrilled by this man. America is on the verge of destruction. There is no insanity greater than electing a pathological narcissist as president. He wrote this a little bit before the election. Again, Dr. Sam Vaknin is an Israeli psychologist. Take it for what it's worth. Take it or reject it. Your decision, but at least you're going to have an intelligent choice. You do not get that tonight from the speech of the imposter, the great imposter, the great imposter. 1-800-449-8255. We'll put that up for your reading pleasure on michaelsavage.com so you can peruse it and study it for yourself and see what you think. Albany, New York. Mike, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, what a pleasure it is to talk to you. Thank you for writing the book, Healing Your Children Naturally.
Thank you. Yes, I didn't write that for myself, you see. I wrote that for the children of America.
How does it feel to write something that great knowing that you're helping people like that? It's got to be a great
Mike,
feeling.
I wrote that book in 1982. I republished it a few years ago. Do you know that the left wing attacks me even for having written that book? Do you realize how demented they are that they would even take my earlier work, which is totally in accord with their philosophy, or should be, and they try to smear my work itself because they don't like my politics, my current politics? It shows you how demented they are.
Do you realize when we're driving down the road listening to you tell a story about a man named One-Armed Frank? It's probably one of the first times we listen to you. We love telling stories. We go to the library and hang out. We don't do video games. We're a little weird.
One Arm Frank is a true story, as is Dead Man's Pants. I doubt that anyone else in the American media was raised and had to wear Dead Man's Pants to save money in their household. Al Gore claims he was raised in a trailer, as you well know. Remember that during the election? He was raised in a trailer with Tipper. My God, what they get away with.
Savage.
Well, here's some breaking news. Apparently, the narcissistic president said today, now it could be he made a mistake, he said Obama has invited the Tea Party leaders to speak with him. That's right. Remember when he said he'd never heard of them? And that some leftists in the media actually said it was un-American to gather and protest the government? Could you imagine what kind of country we're living in? So apparently they've been invited to meet Obama. And he's giving a speech today. Maybe he got carried away. And he said that. I'm going to quote him right now. He was at the Missouri meeting on his 100th day in office, and he commented on the Tea Party demonstrations as follows. He said, "Those of you who are watching certain news channels on which I'm not very popular, and you see folks waving tea bags around," said the president, "let me just remind you that I am happy to have a serious conversation about how we are going to cut our health care costs down over the long term, how we are going to stabilize Social Security." Now, this is the same president who said that he didn't watch the Tea Party rallies. He didn't care about the million people and the 350 Tea Party protests around the country. There's actually a revolution brewing in this country, incidentally. So the leaders of some of these protests said, yes, we will meet with the president. We want to address the president's runaway march to socialist statism. It's an article in WorldNet Daily that you really should see. And I don't know whether they'll attend. I mean, I don't know whether he's going to carry forward on this. It could be he was just talking out of turn and the teleprompter failed. And he said that and doesn't mean that. I hope he meets with them. We'll see what happens. Leadership of the Tea Parties will meet Obama. I doubt it. I doubt very, very much if he will follow through on this invitation. I think it was just a kind of, you know, statement that he made during his speech. That's all. 1-800-449-8255. What would you like to talk about? Parental rights, Israel, oh, God, don't get me started. Aaron Klein is up on the next hour. It's almost sad it's sad. You've got a country armed to the teeth that won't fire a weapon. You thought that, Netanyahu would be different? I knew he wouldn't be. They're all the same. They promise, and then they become the leader, and then they just grab the money, pay back their cronies. The whole West is crippled. That's how, for example, a group of ragtag kids, terrorists at that, in little boats with a few Kalashnikovs, can take control of ships because we have a crippled government, a cowardly crippled government. What's the good of having weapons that you don't use? So if you're a kid in Somalia and you have no money, what you do is you go out and you hold up a ship for ransom and you get paid off. They're making $1 million here, $1 million there, because we have cowards running the West. We had legitimate leaders, they'd be blown out of the water before they came near the boat. 1,000 yards, blow them away, kill them all. That's all. What are you worried about them for? What's a Navy for? What was it created for? It wasn't created as a social welfare organization with propellers. The U.S. Navy was not created for diversity's sake. The U.S. Navy was not created to disseminate shoes and uniforms to kids from the slums, were they? I'm sorry to be so harsh. The U.S. Navy was created to protect merchant fleets. I guess they've forgotten their mission. We got nuclear submarines with missiles that are beyond comprehension, the power. Each silo contains a missile that can launch how many different rockets and warheads, I don't know. I have no idea. One rocket flying out of a submarine underwater, undetectable, can launch, and then 8 different rockets fly off, can wipe out 8 cities, God forbid. But we can't sink a Dow with an Evinrude motor on the back of it, with a bunch of ragtag pirates, with Kalashnikovs, because we lack the will to defend ourselves, because we don't have leadership. We have a bunch of ninnies and feminists running the country. Professors and feminists concerned only with their own agenda, not with protecting America. If we had real leadership, message would have gone out many years ago to the pirates. You come within X yards of a ship, we're going to destroy you. We're killing you. We don't care who's on the boat. We don't care if you take your women and children, your grandmother. They're all going to go meet Allah because we're going to kill you. You're not going to take our ships. End of story. I can't understand how this goes on. I don't understand who ties the hands of the U.S. Navy. Well, excuse me. Of course I understand it. The same people who prosecute the U.S. Marines. The same people who persecuted Lieutenant Colonel Chesani. And remember, I contributed money to that defense. You contributed money to that defense because it's the right thing to do. And remember, I don't boast about a lot of the things that I support and give money to. I don't pull stunts saying I'll give money if you do this or I'll give money if you do that. I don't urinate on myself during a television show where they have to sell a studio after I'm through, like Oderman. The reason they have to sell the MSNBC studios, it's rumored, is because the floors are contaminated by his inability to control his bladder during a show. He gets so worked up and excited. It's sad. And it's an illness. I recognize that. And I don't like to pick on sick people. But look, the fact of the matter is NBC is leasing their studios in Washington because the floors have been contaminated by Oderman. And their ratings are going down as a result of this far-left agenda. They think that because Obama's president, the whole world loves Obama. Well, again, apparently the listenership is down. The viewership is in the garbage since they put Oderman on and then that girl, the one who looks like Pat, the unisexual, you don't know what she is. I mean, I don't want to pick on her. She's, you know, sad. In my day, she would have been a Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey as the half-man, half-woman. And I suppose that there is an audience for that sort of thing. In my day, they were in the back room of the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus. Today, they're on MSNBC. Okay. That's all. I mean, look, this is the way it works. It's the equivalent of Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Freak Show. You don't have to go to the circus anymore. Just turn on the channel in your neighborhood and you see either Pat, the ambisexual, or the man who can't control his bladder. But that's off the point. The point I'm making is that because they think that because Obama's president, their far-left politics are suddenly popular. The exact opposite is true. The reason Fox News is thriving, even that's in spite of Schlepp Smith's liberalism. That's in spite of the left-wing tilt of some of them. Because they do a good job of reflecting the mainstream of America. That's why they're doing well. And that's why talk radio is actually thriving right now. You're not going to read this in the newspaper. You're not going to read that my audience is as strong or stronger than ever. You're not going to read that my advertisers are as stronger than ever. You're not going to read that in the Wall Street Journal owned by Murdoch because they're my competitors. He owns competitors in radio. You're never going to read anything about me. So it's my job to tell you that things have never been better. Business is good and people are wonderful or whatever, something like that. Or people are wonderful in business. I don't, whatever it is. But I am here to tell you that Obama ran as a centrist and he's ruling as a far-left radical. And the American people are on to him. And it's only a matter of time until the middle-of-the-road blue dog Democrats, so-called, start balking at this man's socialist Marxist policies. When it will happen is anyone's guess. But it's indicative to me that it's already happening. When I see, for example, that Russ Feingold, as liberal as they come, and we did put it back up on michaelsavage.com. It's a very important article. It's not going to be published widely because it criticizes the narcissist. But the fact of the matter is the article is there. ABC News, Democrat says Obama gets a D on a rule of law. That's Russ Feingold saying that. President Obama is receiving a D for his handling of state secrets in a rule of law report card prepared by fellow Democrat Russ Feingold. That's huge news because Russ Feingold is a far left liberal Democrat himself. But even he is starting to be concerned about the narcissist professor. He sees that something's wrong with this picture. So he's trying to, you know, rein him in. Now, it's not necessarily that Feingold is doing this for the sake of America. It's because he realizes that he has to go back to his constituents and get reelected. And they're starting to balk. The Democrats are starting to balk. And they're sending memos and messages and emails. They're saying, we're going to throw you out unless you stand up to Obama's radical socialism. And I predict a wholesale slaughter at the polls in the next election amongst the Democrats. I know that Al Inspector moved over, but Al Inspector's always been a whore. I covered him yesterday. W-H-O-R-E. It's a word. It has a meaning. It defines all inspector. He has been a prostitute from the day he began in politics, in my opinion. And we still have the article up, and I hope you've printed it up, because we found it, and we did it from the National Review of years ago. And it is still up there, I believe, All Inspector. Here, how All Inspector helped a murderer skip bail. John J. Miller. Fabulous article. It says, long before he became one of the most liberal senators, Republicans in the Senate, All Inspector demonstrated a knack for notoriety. And he goes on how he helped a murderer skip bail named Ira Einhorn, who murdered his girlfriend and put her in a trunk and hid her in his apartment. It was All Inspector who helped get him a low bail and helped get him out of the country, according to prosecutors. So All Inspector has long been a whore. And yes, it looks very bad right now, but this is early on yet. This is early on right now. We don't know where this will lead. I suspect that the Blue Dog Democrats are going to balk. Here's another story. Muslims sentenced in Fort Dix plot. Muslims sentenced in Fort Dix plot. You have to read the whole article to realize they were Muslims. The news has become so distorted that you don't know that the plot is against killing military personnel, possibly at Fort Dix, were all Muslims who were plotting to bomb the base. You have to read the whole article. Now, what does Muslim have to do with it? Anything or nothing. You decide. That's all. You decide if it has anything or nothing to do with it.
Former Bernie Frank Schaefer, now top Goldman Sachs lobbyist. My name is Bernie Frank. And I'm in the House Financial Services Committee. I'm a very smart man. I'm smart. Not Barney do this, Barney do that. I'm smart now. I run the Financial Services Committee. I know a lot about business. When my boyfriend ran a cat house in our apartment years ago in Georgetown, he made quite a bit of money. And it's the days of war told me that I'm quite a special man.
I'll be right back. The Savage Nation, as you know, the newspaper industry is dying, which I told you I'm not looking forward to. It's sad. I'm not one of those who's sitting here with glee. I mean, sure, a crappy newspaper should go because there's no readership for lies. I may disagree with their opinions, but if they're well-researched, it gives me the basis for many of my show topics. So I need the newspapers, particularly the good ones. But you look at the book world. Remember, I have had over 20 books published. I can't keep up with the number. And prior to joining radio, I had 18, 19 books published in New York Publishers, so I know an awful lot about what happened there. And what happened there was they moved rapidly to the left. They started to reject any books that were not in the political arena that they agreed with. They started publishing worthless junk on gays and lesbians and stuff that nobody was buying, and they were losing money and bleeding financially. So I understand that there was a group called Penn, whatever that is, some kind of group of so-called writers. And what's interesting to me and almost eerie is that they had a dinner on April 28th for the Penn Foundation's annual Black Tie Gala at the Museum of Natural History, where writers and editors and agents gathered. And they, standing in front of the big dinosaur skeleton mounted in the middle of the room, and one of them said he hoped that the dinosaur skeleton was not a symbol for the future of the publishing industry. It is. And it is because you can't continue to publish books that people don't want to read any more than you can continue to publish newspapers that people refuse to buy. And you know, truthfully, that is why I ceased even working with publishers. I don't need them anymore. I bypass publishers now. My last book, Psychological Nudity, was my first publication where I designed the cover, used my own photograph. I didn't take it, but someone did at one of my parties of me and Teddy. I had it designed. I had it printed, published, you know, edited. And I've sold only on my website. It's amazing to me how the world has changed. Whereas in the past, I would have had to fly to New York, go to an editor, sit in her office, put up with her taking phone calls, then go to the obligatory lunch. I did it for years. You know, then hope for an advance. I lived on advances for years. It was the way I lived. I had many best-selling books stolen from me by editors in New York. I can name a few, but I won't bother right now. Some of the authors are dead now. My book, Maximum Immunity, was stolen before it was published and published by a sack of garbage doctor in New York. He made a fortune. Well, he died soon thereafter, a couple of years later, not anything to do with me. God sees the truth but waits. That's all I can say. But, you know, you survive. You survive your losses. You survive your successes. Sometimes your successes are harder to survive than your losses, incidentally. Only successful people know what I'm talking about. Ask them. Sometimes it's more difficult to survive your success than it is your failure. The world loves failures. The world helps you if you're a failure. The world welcomes you if you're a failure. The world nurtures you if you're a failure. The world hates successful people. The world wants successful people to fall on the ground and die. So that's just a little bit of whatever, neither here nor there. Let's go to the callers, please. Let's go down to Los Angeles. Always pleasant to hear from people in the City of Angels. Jason on KGIL, what's on your mind? You're welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, you know me, Jason. I'm a conservative TV writer from Los Angeles. I've talked to you quite a few times before. And I have to tell you, I got to tell you this whole thing through, if you don't mind. It's scary how your prophecies always seem to come true. You talked about this flu thing, or even worse, over a year ago. And you also, even to the letter, told how the politicians will backpedal after all this is done. You're like Nostra Savage. But you're at your very best when you turn and go on the attack and hold your enemy's feet to the fire. And you've got such a huge army of loyal followers and potential followers that you wouldn't believe it. And if places like, if groups like Code Pink can go out there and get their garbage word to such a huge cross section, or if the Tea Party, I mean, you would make the Tea Party you're following look like...
I love the Tea Parties. They did a great job. However, the answer is, and if I had decided to do a 20 city tour, I could fill 20 stadiums around America. I could shift the dynamic in America. I could change the balance of this country. But I'm not going to do it. I'm a radio host, and that's all I am at this point in my life. You're a screenwriter. Why don't you write a movie? Maybe I'll fund it. Write a movie about a charismatic talk show host who is very shy, refuses to meet the public, and changes the course of human events.
I'm telling you, I would, and I have some stuff. I don't know how to get it to you or how you can get in contact.
Jason, I'm very serious. You know, I've been toying for 2 years now with people who want to do my life story. I know that it would be a fairly successful movie. How big a documentary it would be, I don't know. But I know that there's an audience for it. It's not a matter of whether it would work or not. It would. How big it would be, I don't know. I have a friend who's in the movie business who said he can get me into 700 theaters. So there's no question in my mind I could do a documentary about Michael Savage. But there's a limit to my ego. I'm not as narcissistic as some people may think. Okay? Anyone in this business has to be mildly narcissistic. So sometimes you have to put the brakes on your narcissism. However, if you were to write a screenplay based upon a character who was a talk show host, whose words alone, never seen, rarely seen, shapes the course of human events, who the guy is almost like a prophet from the Bible in some ways. He jokes around sometimes. He's got a hangover. Sometimes he tells you crazy stories. But sometimes he hits you so hard you don't know where it came from. I just might see if I can get it produced. So what I'm going to do for you, Jason, I don't know you. You don't know me. Is I'm going to leave you on the line. Gentlemen, please get Jason's email address and send it to me. And Jason and I will be in touch. And we will meet and we will talk and there will be a screenplay written and I will fund it. And then I will see if the federal government will give me any TARP money to produce it. I will go to my good friends in the film industry and my good friends in the White House. As you well know, I'm well loved in Hollywood and in Washington, D.C., and we will see if we can get some stimulus money to produce the Michael Savage story. Because we know how big a tent Obama has created. We know that he wants everybody in the tent. So I'm going to see if I can get $10 million of TARP money to produce the Michael Savage story and put it out in video and DVD in order to make certain that those in America who want to see my version of the world can see it. Oh, it's fun. It's fun. It's fun. It's fun. It is. You know, the die is cast. The die is cast. This is it. Right now, a far-left congressman from New York is trying to drop the 22nd Amendment, which bans more than two terms for a president. And he wants Obama to become, like Idi Amin, president for life. And since they now have a supermajority, I expect that we will have a dictatorship in America very shortly. Everything that you feared is happening more rapidly than you feared. Everything you prayed would not happen is happening. And it's happening under the guidance of an extremely charismatic, very dangerous narcissist and you're watching the world go round. There's nothing I can do about it. Nothing.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Janet Napolitano says we don't need borders against the flu. Well, we certainly need a Homeland Security Secretary who knows what the word homeland means in order to have security. A fellow Democrat has said that President Obama is getting a D for his handling of state secrets and a rule of law report card. That's right. Left-wing Democrat Russ Feingold says that Obama gets a D on the rule of law. Did that make it to your local paper? And the Centers for Disease Control may as well be called the Centers for Disease Dissemination. From the CDC, it should become the CDD, because the jerk who runs it says we should fully expect to see deaths from the flu. Now, that's very encouraging. China now has 100 million people with mental illness. I'm sure that the Politburo contains 100% of the people with mental illness. Also on michaelsavage.com from the London Daily Mail, lessons about homosexuality will be compulsory from age of 11. What happened to the union, Jack? Oh, and don't miss this one. Bernie Frank, you know Bernie Frank, the genius Bernie Frank? Well, former Bernie Frank staffer, Bernie Frank, the genius, the business genius, who, so far as I know, has only run a cat house out of his boyfriend's apartment. Bernie Frank staffer is now a top Goldman Sachs lobbyist. That's right, you heard me right. Goldman Sachs' new top lobbyist was recently the top staffer to Representative Bernie Frank. We better put that aside for a minute. You've heard me mention the fact that Israel's passivity has put it in very real danger. I mean, groups like Hamas are pledging to destroy Israel. Iran is getting closer to getting nuclear weapons. And it seems that the threat to Israel's survival is growing, and yet the rest of the world, of course, seems not to notice or even care. There's nothing new about that. The question is, why is Israel committing suicide? Aaron Klein has a new book out entitled The Late Great State of Israel. It's sad, but he joins us now to talk about it.
Thanks, Michael. Here in Jerusalem, Israelis are celebrating Yom Ha'atzma'ot, which is Israeli Independence Day. It celebrates the country's founding. And to mark this day, I'm releasing, as you just said, a new book, and it's entitled The Late Great State of Israel. The subtitle is How Enemies Within and Without Threaten the Jewish Nation's Survival. And my main argument is that Israel is facing unprecedented mortal danger, that it's traveling down a path, down a road that if it's not changed, if things are not altered in a major way, there might not be a Jewish state in the near future. And you might immediately ask, because if you look at the subtitle, How Enemies Within, what am I talking about here? Am I talking about the Israeli government? Am I saying that the Israeli government is an enemy of the Jewish state? And yes, indeed, I'm arguing that in part that it's the Israeli government policies and really one folly after another that are emboldening Israel's enemies, including Iran, to the point where the Jewish state really faces unprecedented danger. Take, for example, I'm sure we all watched Israel's war against the Hamas terrorist organization. It was in December and January. And you might remember, Michael, that one of the main goals of this war was to obliterate Hamas as a fighting force and also to stop Hamas from firing rockets into the nearby Jewish population centers. Well, none of those goals were met. that, Hamas continues to exist as a major fighting force. It has the ability to fire rockets. Then, toward the end of the war, Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, he was in charge at the time, he announced that one of his other goals, you might remember, was to stop Egypt from, to stop Hamas from smuggling weapons from Egypt into the Gaza Strip. And that goal, of course, fell totally short. The weapons continue to be smuggled in, as the international media is reporting. But let's just take a larger look at what Israel's failure to destroy Hamas has done. And actually, really, the opposite. What Israel has done, what Prime Minister Ehud Olmert had did, and in many ways what Benjamin Netanyahu, the new prime minister, continues to do, is emboldening Hamas and actually legitimizing Hamas. It was Israel, after its war, that started indirectly negotiating prisoner exchanges and border agreements with Hamas. And this sent messages to the international community. It sent messages even to the Obama administration, as I'm going to talk about in just a little bit, that, well, if Israel's talking to Hamas, then maybe it's okay if the rest of the world does.
Hamas is an arm of the Iranians. Aaron, are you saying Israel is strengthening Iran?
Indeed, Michael, Hamas in many ways is seen as a proxy of Iran. And one of the main things that Israel's policy has done over the last few years is strengthen Iran to the point where Tehran has now placed its proxies literally strangling the Jewish state. We have Hamas in the Gaza Strip, which is an Iranian fighting force. Then, as I talk about in the late great State of Israel as well, after Israel failed to win in 2006 against the Hezbollah militia and terrorist organization in Lebanon, if anything, as I argue, Israel not only failed to win, but it strengthened Hezbollah. Hezbollah now has more rockets and weapons facing the Jewish state that can literally target almost any point in Israel than before the war. And more than that, Israel in many ways legitimized Hezbollah and essentially fed it to the Lebanese government, where Hezbollah now literally controls the parliament of Lebanon. And this in many ways was an Israeli government folly. So you have Hamas in Gaza, Hezbollah to Israel's north. Then you have Syria, which is in a military alliance with Iran, which has weapons and rockets that can reach the entire Jewish state, which openly hosts the governments of Hamas and of Islamic Jihad. Well, Syria was being isolated under the Bush administration, and then came Israel, came Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, and unconditionally opened negotiations with Syria. And that led the way to the United States and the international community also talking to Syria, which is a policy that we now have continued in many ways under the Obama administration. But if there's any future war, if Israel tries to target Iran's nuclear facilities in the future, Iran essentially has the ability now, in part because of Israeli government policies and follies, to wreak havoc on the Jewish state with all of its proxies that surround Israel.
Aaron, it looks like we have a major confrontation coming up between the Obama administration and Israel. What's going to happen?
Indeed, Michael, Iran is now the main point of contention between the Israeli government, now led by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and the Obama administration. We have Obama, who wants talks, who wants dialogue with Iran. And actually, these talks aren't even set to begin until June, when there's a new president installed in Iran, or Ahmadinejad wins the new elections. Even though we all know that it's not the president of Iran that dictates the policies, it's the supreme leaders, it's the theocracy, it's the Ayatollahs who really control the government, and they're not up for election. And so Bibi has major decisions to make. Is he going to wait until Obama's diplomacy with Iran plays out, or is he going to target Iran, which would obviously bring about a costly war for the Jewish state? And I'll tell you, it's not just Iran where Obama's policies are threatening Israel. I document thoroughly in the late great State of Israel that Obama's overall Middle East policy, not just his talks with Iran, but also with Syria, and then in Afghanistan and Pakistan, threaten in many ways the Jewish state. And one of the major issues that I really see coming up is whether Obama is going to legitimize Hamas terrorists.
Well, are we running out of time, or is this just more scare tactics? What is this?
There are some other major themes, like how Jerusalem has already been divided. That's right, been divided, including with help from the United States. Also, how Islamic authorities are consolidating their control over the Temple Mount and literally erasing physical archaeological evidence of Jewish historic presence in that area, how the U.S. funds Palestinian terrorism, also a dangerous war that Israel is waging against a segment of its society. It's called the National Religious Camp, that wants to keep Israel as a Jewish country. This and so many other issues are dealt with. And I'll tell you, unless these issues are countered, I am warning, there might not be an Israel in the near future.
Thanks, Aaron. The survival of Israel is essential for America. Your book brings out some great points. We'll be right back. Savage. The Middle East is growing more and more unstable by the day. Besides Iraq, Iran's strength is growing. Afghanistan seems to be getting more and more unstable. We can't forget about Pakistan. Pakistan seems to be having some major problems with the Taliban in their mountainous regions. Joining us today is KT McFarland from KTMcFarland.com with a report on that area of Pakistan.
Hi, Michael. You know, you and I have talked before about Iran and the problem of Iran's nuclear program and what happens if Iran gets nuclear weapons and the threat it presents not only to the Israel, to the region, to the whole world. But frankly, the one that keeps me up at night is Pakistan. That's a country that already has some 90 nuclear weapons. And Pakistan has historically been a pretty unstable government, vacillating between a military government and a civilian government. And right now, the civilian government under Asif Ali Zardari, who was the husband of the late Benazir Bhutto, who was a friend of mine. You know, he's not a very popular guy. He doesn't have a strong government. And he has had threats not only from within politically, but from the Taliban, which are making inroads. He's ceded very large segments of Pakistan to the Taliban in the Swat Valley and parts of the frontier between Afghanistan and Pakistan. And the Taliban keep coming. Now, in the last couple of days, the good news is the Pakistani military has beaten them back from coming into Islamabad, but they're going to keep coming. I mean, the Taliban, whether it's in the next couple of days or couple of weeks or couple of months, they'll keep coming. And they'll keep coming for a couple of reasons. They have the money through the Afghan drug trade. They are seen as populist as opposed to the corrupt civilian politicians. They're anti-American, which is very popular in Pakistan. And they also have managed to infiltrate the ISI, the Pakistani Intelligence Service, and the Pakistani military, particularly in the junior officer corps. So the Taliban in Pakistan is not going away. Zardari, although he has been close to the United States and particularly been useful and helpful to us in fighting the AFPAC war and devoted more of the resources, you know, he's now got to be concerned of his own security and his position as prime minister.
So what is likely to happen?
Well, one possibility is if it gets so unstable that it looks like the government is going to collapse, the military might come in under a very well-respected army leader, Kiani. The army in Pakistan is one of the most respected units in Pakistani society. They're seen as really honorable and honest and great integrity and as great patriots. So that's one possibility. Another possibility is that the government, in effect, collapses. And the military leadership loses operational control of those 90-plus nukes, that Pakistan becomes a failed state, very much like Afghanistan was in the 1990s. But at the end of the day, so what do we care? You know, Pakistan's a long ways away. Their major problem is with India, not with America. But the reason we care is that the nightmare scenario in the national security world is nuclear weapons and terrorists. Both of those are bad enough on their own. But if they ever get together so that terrorists get their hands on nuclear weapons, it becomes a threat to everybody in the world, including the United States. Now, what's the long-term solution here? Secretary Clinton, in fact, said last week that it was unthinkable for the Taliban to take over the Pakistani government. But, you know, you better start thinking about it because it's very close to happening. The Taliban are now within about an hour, about 60 miles away from Islamabad. And the government of the current government of Pakistan is, as I said, unstable, both from within and from without. So while it's a scary world out there, it's one that we really need to focus on because of the long-term implications to the United States. For example, in Great Britain, one of the most serious internal threats they have, security threats they have, is from Pakistani nationals who are now British subjects. The British Intelligence Service follows some 2,000 of them on a regular basis, thinking that there are 2,000 who could go operational at any moment. We've not had a problem with Pakistani immigrants into the United States, but you have to worry. What happens if Pakistan fails? Where are those nuclear weapons? Who has their hands on them? And how do you make sure that one or two don't just go missing and end up in the hands of terrorists and show up in Lower Manhattan at the Port Authority? So while the world is focused on Afghanistan and Iraq and swine flu, the one thing we really need to focus on right now is Pakistan, because if the Pakistani government falls and the Taliban has that as its base of operations, not only does it endanger our situation in the Middle East and in the Afghan war, but it really does endanger American security going forward.
Thanks for the report, KT. It's important to keep our eyes on what's going on over there. But there are other topics out there. 1-800-449-8255. I think that the DHS should be renamed to the Department of Homeland, Department of Disease Dissemination, DDD, Department of Disease Dissemination. Because if you hired somebody to make certain that a disease spread as rapidly as possible, you couldn't do better than Janet Napolitano and the CDC is doing. They're doing everything necessary to make certain that the flu virus is spread as rapidly as possible. If you care to comment, you can call me at 1-800-449-8255. I'm not personally going to listen to Obama's lies today. I could care less. He's a con man as far as I'm concerned. Now, I'm sensitive to the issue of folks who are African-American who think that every attack upon Obama is a racial statement. I'm sensitive to it, but I'm not going to cater to it because my position is based upon his policies, not his race. And thus far, he has been a miserable failure. And the polls show it, other than the fake polls. Liberal poll, Gallup. Gallup is a liberal poll, been around forever. So if you want to compare poll to poll, you've got to go poll to poll going back president to president to president. The Gallup organization has been around a long time. They're a left-of-center polling organization, as they all are. And they claim that Obama is as unpopular or within a hair's breadth of Bill Clinton, the second most unpopular president in modern history, at this time in his administration. But you wouldn't know that by watching the Twisted Sisters in the media, and that's why they're going out of business. That's why CNN and MSLGBT is dying. That's why I'm thriving. And frankly, look, I'm not a big fan of Fox News, but they do a very good job by and large, except for Schlepp Smith, who belongs in Al Jazeera, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, Schlepp Smith belongs in Al Jazeera, but he's a pretty boy with blue eyes, and apparently there's a big audience for pretty boy with blue eyes. But Fox News is thriving. They're doing a good job because they're in touch with the mainstream of America. The Fox News channel is actually reflective of the majority of the American people. It's the other organizations that are out of touch with the American people, such as CNN and such as MSLGBT. I mean, MSLGBT has catered so far to the left, it's going out of business. And Keith Olbermann is probably single-handedly responsible for the wreckage of the Peacock. And if GE doesn't see this, I believe there's going to be a worldwide backlash against General Electric's products, by the way.
Savage.
We're rapidly approaching Obama's 100th day in office. Most of the mainstream media is still beaming with pride over their chosen messiah and the wonderful job he's doing leading us down the path of debt and socialism. Joining us today is Jeff Kuhner with his report on Obama's first 100 days.
Michael, we are now here in Washington, in the belly of the beast, and we are now approaching Obama's 100 days. The report cards are out. Media outlets are now flooding with newspaper copy proclaiming Barack Obama as the second coming of FDR, as the greatest president since Franklin Roosevelt, if not Abraham Lincoln. And I have to say, Michael, on one level, I have to agree with the liberal mainstream media. I do believe that Barack Hussein Obama is the most consequential president in our lifetime. And the reason why I say this is as I stand here in Washington, D.C., from the Washington Times, observing this man and his leftist revolutionaries in Congress, I have seen nothing but victory after victory after victory for the forces of socialism. After 100 days, look at what he has accomplished. He has rammed through a nearly $1 trillion stimulus bill. He has put forth a $410 billion massive spending program. Public works projects, construction jobs, payoffs to Hispanics, African Americans, labor unions, environmentalists, every major Democratic constituency has been bought off by the Obama administration. He is now proposing a $3.6 trillion budget. By his own figures, we will be running a $1.8 trillion budget deficit this year. Over the next 10 years, we will have amassed over $9.3 trillion in debt. That is more debt, Michael, than all of the 43 presidents previous to Obama combined. He is burying this country in a mountain of debt. We are now seeing levels of spending that our founding fathers would find incredible and utterly repugnant. He has now promised to ram through nationalized health care by the end of this year. He has promised to grant amnesty to 20 million illegal immigrants by the end of this year. He is proposing to revolutionize and transform our economy into a radical green environmental economy. And this is only the tip of the iceberg. And Michael, what I want to stress to you and to your listeners is this, and I cannot stress this point enough. I originally come from Canada, and I have to say this honestly and unequivocally. I love my homeland. I love Canada. It took in my grandfather and my father, who fled communist persecution in Eastern Europe. It gave my parents a life that they could never have possibly had in Europe. But I saw firsthand the destruction of socialism in Canada. And what many Americans don't understand is that Barack Hussein Obama reminds me of one politician, a transformative politician who transformed Canada from a capitalist Christian country into a secular socialist country. And that person was Pierre Elliott Trudeau. He was Canada's most popular prime minister, the only prime minister truly known on the world stage. Throughout the 1970s, Michael, over 10 years, he literally destroyed Canadian capitalism and Canadian traditional morality. He brought about nationalized health care. He made huge advances in homosexual rights. He liberalized abortion laws and made it legal on demand. He brought about sweeping changes in the country, nationalizing key sectors of the Canadian economy. He changed Canadian foreign policy. Many Americans don't know this, but Canada was actually one of the most hawkish countries in the world in World War I and World War II. While Americans were still debating whether to enter both world wars, Canada went in the day England was attacked. He transformed Canada into a neutral Scandinavian-style country in which Canadian foreign policy became subservient to the United Nations. Trudeau began cozying up with Fidel Castro, with Latin American dictators, and with the butchers in the Soviet Union, just as Barack Hussein Obama is doing today with Castro, with Hugo Chavez, with Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the Nazi in Iran. And after everything was said and done, Michael, and this is the point I really want to stress. It is the mother of all points. In fact, this is the most important point I have ever made on the Savage Nation. Once Canada lost its liberties under Pierre Trudeau and the Trudeau Revolution, they never got them back. Once you cross into socialism, once you transform your democracy, once the Canadian people were no longer free men and women and citizens, but subjects, where now every aspect of their life was controlled and dominated by the state, their health care, their pensions, their unemployment, the fruits of their labor, their taxes. Once that was taken away from them, their sphere in the family, their traditional morality, once all of that was stripped away from them, they have lost their freedom, Michael. And the reason why I came to America so many years ago was because I understood what I think Americans take for granted. This is now the last freest place on the earth. This is the only place left in the world where a man and a woman can stake their fortune, can stake their claim in the world, can live as free men and women, endowed by their Creator with the rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And we are now going the way of the Roman Republic. We are going the way of Canada. We are going the way of Western Europe. Once free nations who understood the importance of limited government, of free markets, of individual rights, of our Judeo-Christian heritage, of everything that made us great and free and proud and strong, all of this is now being swept away like dust in the wind, as we have now been literally enchanted, mesmerized by this magician in the White House. Pierre Trudeau's revolution permanently transformed Canada into a European-style nanny state. This is what Barack Obama is doing now. His first 100 days are the 100 days of a massive socialist revolution. And we are now in the midst of that revolution. And it is now slowly convulsing and transforming every aspect of American society. And what I am here to tell all Americans, because I have seen the fruits of that revolution. I saw it with my ancestors and my grandparents in the former communist bloc. I saw it in Canada. I lived it as I grew up. I have seen the future, and it does not work. You want anemic economic growth. You want high unemployment. You want a society in which marriage is denigrated and destroyed. You want a society in which unborn children are slaughtered. You want a society that literally is so morally permissive and so morally bankrupt that it cannot distinguish dictatorships from democracies, enemies from friends, that champions the ideology of appeasement and surrender. Then you have to go just north of the border and you can see the future. And the best and the brightest of Canada, Michael, have been fleeing that country for the last 15 years, and America has been the beneficiary. But now we are seeing America replicate the very same mistakes that have destroyed republics and democracies before it. And this is why, Michael, I am telling the American public and I am urging your listeners, do not abandon your liberties. Do not abandon your freedoms. Do not abandon your Constitution, which was the greatest document in the history of the world. History and future generations will never forgive you. I'm Jeff Kuhner, the last honest man in Washington. Back to you, Michael.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
You can walk with kings and never lose your common touch, then you will be a man, my son. Rudyard Kipling's great poem. It's very difficult for people to fly around on their own magic carpets and come down to earth and still think clearly. And although they may say that they're not liberals, they're conservative, doesn't matter. Once you start to think you're different and better, you're finished. Then you lose touch with reality. Fortunately for me, have never lost touch with reality. I know what reality is, which is what makes me a functional talk show host. Oh, I get a swelled head every once in a while, but God brings me back down to earth, whether it be a toothache, a lungache, a backache, a footache. Or, I mean, I know my mortality is ever present. I understand the teachings of Don Juan. I know death is ever present. I've never forgotten that. I know that the angel of death trails us wherever we go. And I recognize that it's every breath I take is a gift from God. So, you know, you want to get away from that and start thinking that you're a demigod, go ahead. But if it starts to distort your thinking, then you're losing your value to the people who rely upon you. You must retain your humility. Now, the word humility comes from the word humus, the same root as the word humus, rather. The same word humble, humus, humility. Humus. It means we come from nothing and we return to nothing. You want me to get very dark on you right now? You want me to bring you back down to what you really are? That's what you really are. You're a human being. You're not a god. You're not a demigod. No one is. You are subject to all of the laws of nature. You have not transcended the zoological order. You are not an angel. You are a human being. As my mother used to say, I can't repeat it on the air. She was pretty down to earth when I would see people cavorting like fools, movie stars of their time. She would say something in reference to their bath habits. Let's put it to you that way. Something to the effect of, do you think that their bath doesn't stink, in other words? I'm sure you've heard the same thing. You know, there's a lot to be said for peasant wisdom. Peasant wisdom has a way of transcending all the BS in the world. And peasant intuition is often much smarter than elite wisdom. So don't underestimate the peasant. That's all I can say to you. Now, what you'd like to talk about is your business. 1-800-449-8255. So the CDC has 91 confirmed cases in the USA. That doesn't mean there aren't more. That means there are many, many more. It's just that they haven't been confirmed yet. How many hundreds of others are sick who haven't even gone to the doctor? Why have 30 U.S. Marines been quarantined at Camp Pendleton? Well, because one Marine has the swine flu in the dorm or whatever. And for the CDC to raise the alert level to 5 out of 6, I think it's very, very prudent of them, number one. WHO warns flu pandemic imminent. And for idiots in the media to say pay no attention to it is foolish. They're no different than the liberals who say don't close the borders. Same stupidity, same arrogance. And so since the government is not going to protect you, you have to do what you can to protect yourself. And it certainly goes beyond washing your hands, schmuck. It goes beyond washing your hands, comma, schmuck, period. Okay? Avoid crowds, number one. Watch out who's handling your food. If you're going to be in a big city, my friends, you got problems on your hands. That's a literal statement. You have problems on your hands. You go to a supermarket? Go ahead. Go to a supermarket. Go push a cart now in a supermarket and then rub your eye and nose. You can say with definitive certainty that you know who pushed the cart before you. They didn't have a little snot in their hand. You want me to get really graphic with you? You know what your hand just touched? How do you know? Oh, you know. I suggest you wear throwaway gloves when you go in public places. You know, it's very intriguing this is coming up now. I got to go back to a story from yesteryear. And I don't remember the year, 67, 68, I don't remember when. I was in the Grand Bahama Island with a friend when it was just being developed. And he offered me a job. I was a young kid. I think I was a teacher. I don't even remember. He said, well, why don't you come to the Bahamas and sell real estate with me? I'm not a good salesman, by the way. My heart wasn't in it. But he made a fortune. He wanted to make a big fortune. He was in with the early developers of that lovely island. I believe the man's name was Remington. One of the last survivors of the Remington fortune who created the Remington Rand Corporation. And to me, when I was a poor kid, if I met a man who was that wealthy, I was like looking up to a god. You know what I'm saying? Poor kids look up to the rich, no matter what they say to you. So when I got around this guy, I try to speak with him quietly, and I try to learn something. And I said to him, isn't it true, because I read somewhere, that he added to the family fortune in the 1918 era, in the flu era, could have been his father. Listen to this. By putting out paper wallets for money that people could throw away after getting cash from a bank because people were so afraid of spreading, of the flu spreading. I mean, someone will rip the idea off. It won't go around today. But you go to a cash machine. You trade cash. Paper is a very good way to transmit viruses. It's extremely, extremely good because it's somewhat porous. It's got a lot of ridges in it. Viruses can be carried in a paper bill. Very, very good way to spread the flu is to give dollars, take dollars in supermarkets, give coinage, take coinage in various places. So you have a lot to think about. You have an awful lot to think about. Is this panic? I hope not. I'm not trying to panic you. I'm trying to give you reasonable advice beyond what the liars in the government are saying. If I was in charge, the borders would have been closed Saturday. I would have the National Guard on the border. Nobody who was sick would come across this border. Nobody who was sick would go into a U.S. hospital. I would have put state troopers in every hospital in America. No non-citizen gets into the hospital. They would be turned away at the hospital door. Not because I'm a mean guy. not because I want to hurt sick people, but because my obligation as a public health official is to protect the healthy more than it is to treat the sick. Don't you understand everything is upside down? Of course you want to treat the sick if you can, but your first job as a public health official is to protect the general population from the disease, not to protect the sick people from the general population. But this is an example of a topsy-turvy world that we live in, where virtually every policy is upside down and backwards. That's how you have a pervert like Barney Frank in charge of banks who takes his top staffer who goes to the Goldman Sachs, and the man doesn't go to jail. Everywhere you turn, you have crooks and perverts running everything. You wake up today and you find out that a woman who worked for George Soros is now number two in the Defense Department, or number three. And you say, this can't be happening. It can't be. It is happening. No epidemic has been treated like this, except those that have been politicized. And there have been many examples of that in this country. But let's look at Europe. France has asked the European Union to suspend flights to Mexico. Air France crew refuses to board a flight to Mexico. Germany, Austria confirm cases. United Kingdom, they're going to leaflet every house. Phoenix police are wearing protective gear to protect against the flu. 30 Marines have been quarantined. But the dummies who run the government say, wash your hands. Don't close the border, wash your hands. You're not being protected by your government. Your government is protecting the virus. Now, are they knowingly protecting the virus to hurt you? No. They're knowingly protecting pig farmers and commerce that flows from Mexico and from the U.S. And I understand that. But they have their priorities upside down. They're thinking as they normally do in the short term. And you can do short-term thinking and have short-term gains. But in the long term, this will cost the economy much more if the disease spreads at a rapid rate, at a more rapid rate. So what you have to do is eat it and take a short-term loss for a long-term gain. And that means slam the border shut, use National Guard troops, put them on the border, nothing in, nothing out, and just accept the essentials. That's all. End of story. Now, will it stop the flu? No. But it will slow the flu. You're certainly not going to bring more sick people into America to get sick and make the doctor sick. I heard from a doctor who I'm not going to mention right now, just as Michael Savage told you. The sick Mexicans are coming into hospitals in California. Doctors have been told not to come into some community hospitals unless it's an emergency for their patients. They know what's going on. Mexicans are swarming across the border. They could care less about you. They could care less about the patients in the hospital. They care only about themselves, as most people do. They want gold-plated free medical care. And they know that the gringo system is so upside down that they're going to get gold-plated medical treatment, or they can sue with the help of Marvin from the ACLU. And that's how a nation dies. I came into radio 15 years ago with a program that was entitled Immigrants and Epidemics. Believe me, I know what I'm talking about. This is the Savage Nation. With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
Savage.